You can't delegate digital transformation for your company. You and your executives have to own it. Executives need to engage, embrace, and adopt new ways of working with the latest in emerging technologies. And that's where we come in. Welcome to Embracing Change. The business world is changing at a faster pace than it ever has, and companies need to keep up. We interview the most interesting CEOs, CMOs, and other executives to talk about their challenges with digital transformation in their industry. This is Embracing Change, and this is your host, Gerardo Carrick.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Embracing Change, the podcast about digital transformation, where we talk to leaders in different areas of the business world about their experience with everything related to digital transformation. Our guest today is Fariz Alami. Fariz is a very, very interesting guest for us today because it's totally something new that we're going to be discussing today. Let me tell you a little bit about his experience. Fariz has been a special advisor and entrepreneurial ecosystem expert with the World Bank, a business advisor with Goldman Sachs, a mentor to MBA students and entrepreneurs globally. He facilitates economic and workplace development programs on entrepreneurship, small medium enterprise development, mentorship, and funding. Fariz also works with high-ranking officials, presidents of countries, ministries, universities, incubators, accelerators, and economic development groups. His insights into strategies has been sought out by more than 61 leaders of nations and organizations. So he's basically a rock star when you're thinking about the macroeconomic development. Hi, Fariz. How are you?
I'm so good. Good to see you. You're very kind. Thank you so much.
Well, you're very kind for spending some time with us. Thank you so much. So Fariz, I tried to make an intro on your experience, but I think I probably have missed a couple of things. Maybe our audience would benefit from your own introduction.
Oh, you're very kind. I think you did more than enough. And some of these roles, obviously, there's some from my past and some I'm currently doing. But yeah, I think overall, entrepreneurship and small business development, the tagline that I usually say, I support organizations launching entrepreneurship programs or activities, as well as small business development activities in their local communities. So this is really kind of like in a high level. An example would be a city or a state or a country developing a program to either start businesses or to grow businesses. Mm-hmm. I'm usually one of the people that can contribute to those kinds of things.
Wow.
As an organization.
Wow. So the type of work that you do takes you to regions that are not that well known for their entrepreneurship, right? Or we don't know much, perhaps we don't hear much around the United States about the work done in those regions, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I've been lucky. So even within the U.S., even the cities that we work in, sometimes those cities are not known for entrepreneurship activities or small business development. And this mm-hmm. is usually why I'm called in, to make sure that there are some things that are happening that could elevate the level of commitment that someone's already doing in the place. It's not like there's nothing happening. Usually my discovery has been there always something going on. It's just not getting anybody's attention. And mm-hmm. sometimes it's just a matter of because the scale, sometimes just a matter of political things, all kinds of reasons why something is making it or not making it to the national or international news. But yeah, I've been to, as far as Myanmar in Southeast Asia, all the way to, obviously North US and everything is still in between. So mm-hmm. some places are really well known for entrepreneurship. Most of them, I would say, are not known at all. And that is one of the tasks. I usually get to shifting the culture or the mindset of moving from an employment mindset to entrepreneurship mindset.
Oh, wow. That's very interesting. So tell me about that. Tell me a little bit about that. When you're working with this, or why don't you help me paint the picture of the situation, right? What is happening in the community that is a trigger for someone like you to start getting involved?
Yeah, so there are two things, maybe two factors, maybe three. I'll go through those in a second. So the first one is the institutions that are there, usually city, government, large institutions, looking at and seeing that everybody in the community is thinking about getting a job. There's a culture of being an employee culture or employment culture. I'll use a couple of examples. Like, for instance, in Detroit, there's an great mindset of I could work for one of what they could consider maybe the big three, meaning the big three automobile companies, right? Mm-hmm. I also worked in some of the Gulf Country Council area, in which is there, think of like the, oil-rich countries. And it's the same concept. Like somebody might think, why should I risk my savings when I can go get a job somewhere with the government and they'll take care of me? And sometimes it's just also war zones, right? So therefore, they can't really think about starting a business because they don't even know what is going to happen tomorrow, whether a bomb is going to be dropped at them or something like that. So these are three examples that we have worked with. And then when we go in, I usually tell people the entrepreneurship mindset is always there. It's just a matter of kind of like, giving it a little bit of water or some seeds if it's not there, and then waiting for the water to come one day to it, right? So the idea is, how can we shift this mindset? Say, not saying that you shouldn't work somewhere, you probably should. In the meantime, can we think about what would it look like if you were to start a business? And I think a lot of times my role is to bust some of the myths about it. So one is, I'm going to get rich tomorrow morning, so I'm going to quit my job. Well, that's not going to happen. So let's be real about how it's going to work. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that whenever I say those things, I always tell people, it's not that I'm saying that it shouldn't happen or it won't happen. It's just the odds of it happening is less from what I've seen, right? So therefore, I want to minimize the opportunities of you getting to make something happen with your business versus just going after the wrong motives for it or going after the wrong, ideas about it. Mm-hmm. The second misconception that it's, like so hard or can't be done unless you have all this resources. And I also people, it's not that it's hard. It is hard. There's nothing that you could do in life that is not hard. The question is, can you start with what you have today? As a matter of fact, one of the blogs I wrote about, start with what you have, because a lot of times you'll think, well, I'm missing all this stuff. I have never yet met anyone, including the people who have resources, that did not miss something to start a business or to grow a business. So therefore, let's just look and see what we have to get you started. So those are usually the times where I get called when someone is saying, we're trying to shift the culture here, or we have the second time, we're trying to commercialize technology from the university and get some excitement around our education and training and entrepreneurship activities. And then the last one is when someone is trying to get some of the small businesses to scale up. So, and I do it, I've been lucky to do it in what I call a couple of tracks. I call it the play space track, as well as the tech track, as well as multiple underserved or underrepresented communities. So it's not one or another or different groups. I've been lucky to work in lots of different groups, including the majority of one country or another.
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting. And this whole concept about being able to change your mindset and realize that entrepreneurship is an option, right? And I think we see a lot of that with the migrant communities too, right? We see a lot of migrant communities that cross borders, and they come into a new
environment,
right? And many of them start employment, but many of them start their own businesses soon, right? And we see that across borders, not only the U.S. borders, but I think that that is also seen in communities around Europe, right, and across Africa, right? Sure. You see people moving for a better life and then being motivated to, then they've already risked enough. The concept of risking for a business is not is not the worst thing, right? Because they've already risked being away from their families, etc. Right? Yep. So that's fascinating. But I would like to hear, and I know this podcast is about digital transformation, but we're gonna get there because we know that because of digital tools now, you know, some of these communities have access to possibilities that they could not have before, right? But before we get there, something I'm interested in understanding is, what are the differences you see for this challenge of the entrepreneurial mindset, right? Between, let's say, urban areas in the United States, like you mentioned, Detroit, et cetera, versus other faraway places that you work with, right? Maybe countries that have been under a potential war, or third world countries. I mean, what differences you see in the challenge of changing that mindset?
Sure. That's a loaded question, you know.
I know it's a loaded question. I hope you can simplify the answer.
Yeah, we could unfold it maybe a few times. But
I guess I'm wondering if there is a common threat that, yep, regardless of your environment, is still the same and real. Yep. And maybe there are elements that are very dependent on where you're coming from, in terms of your environment, to be able to face this challenge.
So in a high level, there are lots of common things for sure. And I think what makes my work, for me at least, interesting is those little changes that, although they might be similar from the outside, they're so different on the inside that the more you dig, the more you realize it's much more than just the technical assistance that you may provide to someone or not. Now, remind you, I'm always working in these, I call disadvantaged situations, right? So, mm-hmm. So that could be part of the equation. And the times I worked with, about 10 to 20% of my time worked with, I call it fully resourced, you know, places, they still have challenges. They're just different. And I could talk about that as well if you're interested. But the majority, when I look at an entrepreneur launching a business today in Detroit or Battle Creek or, you know, little city in West Michigan or East Michigan or North Michigan or Arizona or Tucson or any little smaller city or a big urban city in the U.S., there are some similarities, which, as I usually say, is how they think about entrepreneurship. That's usually a misconception. Mm-hmm. The second similarity could be that they're usually, depending on which entrepreneur you're talking about and what's the purpose of why they want to start a business. So I always tell people, we have to understand their motive, because if they have no choice but to start a business, they're going to figure it out. They have no choice. You know, I came from the pathway of, I had no choice. I had to start a business.
Yeah.
If you have the choice to say, be an employee versus start a business, it's a different mindset, a different approach, a different thing. And then, of course, I always talk about, if you have a mindset of being an investor or like a owner, that's also a different approach to these, you know, entrepreneurship endeavors. Mm-hmm. So most of the time I'm dealing with individuals that either are closer to the concept of they have no choice, or they're closer to the concept of, I need to find another stream of income, or I'd like to one day to quit my job and start a business. So that's usually 80% of the time is where I play.
Okay.
Occasionally 10 to 20% of the time I get to work with the other side of things.
Okay.
So in that space, some of the other differences, big differences, would be, is the actual infrastructure that they may have as far as access. Meaning, if I were to ship a product today from Detroit to anywhere else in the world, sure, the city might, oh, by the way, today the city is completely different than, you know, if we're talking about 20 years ago or 25 or 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Completely different situation. But at the time, the infrastructure was still there. Sure, some of the infrastructure might have fallen apart or needed some restoration, or some of the buildings were abandoned. But the reality is, as a U.S., as a country overall, the infrastructure of Federal Express or UPS or shipping ways is still available. Some of the places I worked in, they don't have that infrastructure that could allow you to do such a thing. So you have to work in the micro level space that you're physically in, because that's not going to change the fact for you today or tomorrow. Because if you don't deliver today or tomorrow to your neighbor, the next door, next town neighborhood is not coming to you, because there's no infrastructure to bring them. So that could be some of the differences that I have saw in some of the areas that we worked in.
So let's talk about barriers to entry, right? What are the most common barriers to entry for micro entrepreneurs to start a business?
I would say the first one is the mindset. So mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to that, right? So a lot of times how they're thinking about it. The second is, unfortunately, is the influence. I call it the circle of influence that they have. Because usually the circle of influence that they have is like, well, you don't have this, you don't have that. Because remember, they're coming with this employment mentality. So mm-hmm. they're looking at all the things that you don't have versus what you really have. So some of mm-hmm. it is that kind of barrier, that the surrounding individuals that are being utilized to support them are driving them the wrong directions versus starting a business is not to start. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. third one I would say is sometimes the advising community that's surrounding them come from the wrong spots to support them. So therefore, they're also getting the wrong advice from professionals, right? Because they're either discouraging them or giving them all the bad reasons or all the barriers that exist to help them see that it's not feasible for them to see. Mm-hmm. So I usually try to tackle how they're being coached or trained or approached in the facilitated discussion or all the things that goes around for the support. And the last one, a lot of times, is actually just helping them figure it out. Because a lot of times they want to just get to, for instance, they would like to be able to sell, let's just say, 50 units a week. And because of their finances, because of their location, because of their network, they're only able to sell one or three or five of them a day. Mm-hmm. So that usually becomes a barrier to be able to start it in a way that is meaningful, because they're just playing, you know, they're in the rabbit hole, right? So they sell one, they make a little bit of money to buy another one, and then now they could go sell another one, and they just keep going in this circle. They never really get a jump start to say,
to scale,
here's 50, sell 50 of them. And they don't have to, I mean, I'm not talking about scaling to be a multi-millionaire or billionaire.
No, not true, but you know,
I'm talking about scaling just to be able to pay your rent versus having to have a job and start a business.
Of course, of course. And a lot of what you talked about, it's related to, as you said, mental barriers mm-hmm. and community advice and the people you surround, mentorship, the community you surround yourself with, etc. Do you see different traits based on the communities? I mean, are there some communities that are more inclined to see entrepreneurship as a positive step versus others?
For sure. And so there are lots of places where it, you know, being an entrepreneur is a dream for many. And for others, being an entrepreneur is kind of like a problem for some. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in the areas where people are trying to move out of, excuse me, especially in the US, is pretty much seen as a huge opportunity. And sometimes some of the, I'm going to call it the places where the entrepreneurship mindset might have taken a dent. Like also people, it's not there. It's just taking a hit, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning that if employment sounds much better, as an example, during COVID, although many entrepreneurs started businesses and the numbers prove it, right? The last year, as we saw, many people left their endeavors to join employment because if they started the business because they wanted to make a living, mm-hmm. and now I could offer you a job for 60K or 80K or 100K a year versus you trying to hustle to make that kind of money. Many of them jump shipped, right? Mm-hmm, and they say, let me go get a job somewhere because I could make a lot more money and save to even do more when I, in 5 or 10 years.
Of course.
So that kind of, you know, I would say the environment definitely plays a factor to your question about whether it's a good or bad. Generally speaking, it's the obviously in the US, entrepreneurship is somewhat promoted, but I would say it's promoted only in one narrative, right? The narrative is scale up, get rich, go live, you know, any way you want. And that's, I think, the challenge that in the communities I work in, that's not necessarily the narrative that I want them to first pursue, because maybe they're trying to fulfill a problem or a demand in the community, like a small grocery store or restaurant, getting some fresh food, fruit or something that is much more meaningful to them, as well as potentially rewarding financially, but mm-hmm. not in the financial way that is being drawn in the, you know, I'm going to call it the general media population outside of their cities or, you know, counties.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know that you've worked across 80 different industries over 100 different countries. I know that from our prep call before this recording. And I wanted to ask you, do you see any, I know it's a huge variety, right? Do you see any similarities, any trends emerging across industries and markets? Is there anything we can compare and contrast?
There are for sure some similarities. So I think coming up with a, you know, not necessarily a business plan, but a plan to how to launch the business or to grow the business or to scale the business is definitely, I see a lot of similarities there. So coming up with a schedule, coming up with a timetable, coming up with how much money you need is definitely similar. Some of the big differences would be, you know, if you're trying to launch a healthcare company and that has required FDA approval in the US, like some kind of government approval, those things could take 7 to 10 to 14 years just to go through the process of approval. So now if you don't have the funding in place and the resources in place to make that happen and all the clinical trials that needs to go with it, then it's just some, you know, an entertaining conversation. But unless you line those things up, it won't happen. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about starting an IT company, right? You could potentially do that, or you want to build a website for people. You could potentially do that from your basement, where, you know, with maybe with $50 or even less, right? Or you can get someone to even to pay you to do it right away. So this is where they could be potentially different, but the fundamental of how to start it and how to move forward with it may be similar. Another similarity would be is their mindset of, you know, what am I doing to get where I need to go could potentially be similar, because most, both places, they're thinking either they're solving a problem or they're creating an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, as you know this really well, it's not that the entrepreneur's thinking those words that I'm saying here, mm-hmm. but that's the reality of what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. So how does a digital transformation is affecting this sector?
Yeah, I think your space of the world, right? I think it's a huge opportunity right now, because in general, having a being able to access digital things today, much easier than it's ever been. I mean, you know, with the AIs that's available today, where you could just ask it a question and it gives you an answer. Mm-hmm. You could potentially create a whole website based on that, right? You could build your own website by helping this, you know, digital tool helping you. Also, because people could do access to this digital, I mean, as you know, to buy a website even 10 years ago was much more complex than it is today. 20 years ago was, mm-hmm. you know, you had to like really know something to be able to buy it.
Yeah.
Or at least to build a page. Today, there are all kinds of tools that you could just, I'm not saying that they're good. I'm not mm-hmm. just saying that there are tools today that could help people integrate digital transformation or digitizing their company or mm-hmm. digitalizing their company is much more accessible than it's ever been before, which mm-hmm. could be a good thing for those who are exploring entrepreneurship and thinking about ways to start a business, because you could also access customers in a different way. Like before, as you know, you got to get on TV or, you know, or get on the radio. Well, now, if you know that your customers watch Netflix, you could just place his ad there, right? Or if mm-hmm. you know that they need a mailer, you could mail a certain zip code, where before you had to mail all kinds of places to get one.
Yeah.
So the more you have much more data accessible, much now I also say it's much more crowded than before, right? Because
yeah.
I, Ferris, out of my basement, think that I could do a better job consulting and training companies than, you know, someone that's been doing it for 20, 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Or I could build these websites despite the fact that I've only had 2 days of training. Well, someone went to maybe and got a master's in it and been practicing for the last 30 years. I'm not saying one of them is better than the other. I'm just saying that they're different. And therefore, we just have to be aware of what's happening in the marketplace.
Yeah, something that I think is very interesting from an entrepreneurship perspective is a couple of things, right? So the first one is now you have access to digital tools that allow you to put together some sort of offering that at the budget level, that at any budget level, right? I mean, you know, their CRMs, the level of a sales force, which is for enterprise versus, you know, and their CRMs for entrepreneurs that, you know, will cost you $10 a month, right? And of course, they'll have very different functionalities, but it allows you to start, right? So from one perspective, right now, we have the ability to be able to access and create and deliver services to clients that before were just exclusive for those companies that had a budget to be able to pay for the technology, right? So that, to me, that's one of the first elements of impact with micro entrepreneurs. And the second element of impact, and I would love to hear your opinion on this, is the ability to really micro segment, right? In the past, if you wanted to access an advertising market to promote your business, you would have to have a huge budget because you would have to, you know, buy ads in radio or billboards or TV. So you needed budget, right? Well, now you can actually be a small business and be very, very focused on a micro segment, right? You don't have to access the whole market to be able to make a living, right? So you can select that micro segment that could be based on a type of persona you're trying to attract, or even a postcode. You just want to deliver to the people that are nearby, 10 miles around you, right? And therefore allows you to really be competitive in that very narrow space where you can actually do a good job. And I think those two things combined have been very transformative for businesses of all sizes. But I'm not sure if you're seeing the same.
I mean, I'd love to hear more from you on this, right? Because you're the one who's actually going in and talking to the companies about these specifics. What I have seen is, to your point, is, you know, some of the companies taking some stuff to do it in-house. They think that they could create, you know, the social media impact that a company can do for them. Mm-hmm. And for sure, you could do some stuff, for sure. But the reality, as you know, there's just so much into it, you know, kind of like a doctor, going to school for 7 years and practicing to become a doctor versus me saying, oh, you have a fever, so I'm going to give you, you know, NyQuil. I'm no doctor nor qualified to do that. But that's what's happening in the marketplace today, right? People feel, because it's so accessible, that they could do something. I'm not saying that they can't, because some things they should be learning how to do and they try to do it in-house. But some things, you know, it's way beyond what they can do. And I have seen many businesses actually, you know, tackle it. But also I've seen, honestly, some companies trying to think, it's beyond what I've tried. Now I want to do it in a different way. And then going actually and hiring those professionals to do the work. That's definitely another trend that I'm seeing. Different stages of businesses, different mindset of entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. But I definitely seen some of those things shift. Like some of the entrepreneurs I worked with initially would never have paid for a service, and now they might. And the other way around is true. Some of the entrepreneurs that I've seen that they were willing to pay, they got burned out or something happened, and now they're thinking they could figure it out.
Yeah, of course. And you know, I wasn't making a distinction between paying for somebody's services versus not. I was just thinking about the ability to, regardless of how you actually do the segmentation, you're able now to say, okay, you know something, I offer this service to this narrow set of customers in this very specific geo targeted space, right? And that's what I can afford to invest in. This is where I can know, you know, where I know I can provide a good service and actually deliver it, right? And you can create those opportunities now, and you can find those opportunities now thanks to technology versus before, right? Before we didn't have those things. Something else, and I'll be interested to know how you see affecting the whole entrepreneurship mindset, is the gig economy, right? Because before, if you were out of a job, you were out of a job, right? But now you could be out of a job and say, okay, I'm gonna deliver groceries, right, with Instacart, or I'm gonna drive my car and take people around, right? So, how is that? I'm sure you've been doing this for so many years that probably you've seen a huge impact of the gig economy into the work that you do, right?
Yeah, I actually take it today, and for the last, you know, last year and this year, I've been talking about it's really more I call it purpose economy.
Okay.
So meaning that people, and if you take a ride share anywhere with any company and just talk to the people that are giving you the rides, you really quickly will discover what I'm saying here, which is people have, in the past, pre-COVID, I'm going to call it, people used to go to work, and occasionally we heard people would go to live where they want to work, right? So they'll move somewhere because they want to live in that area. And what I've discovered through the last 2 years that people actually not only want to live where they want to work, they're actually going to where they feel that they're making an impact or delivering a purpose of why they think they're here. So I might even quit my job today, despite the fact that it's making me lots of money. I actually had a ride just yesterday with someone. Mm-hmm. Amazing job, amazing benefits, quits to drive a car. And I said, why would you do that? And he said, because I wanted to spend more time with my kids, right? Or I wanted to be with my mom. Or I wanted to be in this neighborhood. Or I wanted to be in this city. So I think this last 2 years, because of the isolation and allowing people to, those who had the chance, to think about why are they here, they started re-examining the work that they're doing. So they're now finding the purpose work or the work that they feel that their purposeful life should be all about. Mm-hmm. And they're finding that kind of work and just doing whatever it takes to make it work. Like I've had others that joined nonprofits or certain groups of companies because they felt the purpose of that company aligned with them individually. So they didn't really care about how much or what is being exchanged in return because they felt it's fulfilling the purpose of why they're here. So yeah. That have definitely changed and made an impact. In addition to having access to all this digital tools, you know, like if you were to say, I want to drive a car, as you know, pre-2000, you wanted to drive a car, you had to get a special license, special insurance.
You needed an investment. You needed
an investment. Big investment. Yeah. I mean, I drove limos. You had to find some kind of money to buy these cars and get this little chartered license, special license that you had to carry and then insurance on it. So none of that is now needed. You just sign up to an app and next thing you know, you're driving, right? Or to your point, create a little ad on Facebook or Instagram or any of these tools out there. And then next thing you know, people are calling you because you're saying, I only want these five people to call me. You'll get those five calls and then maybe you'll get one of them.
Yeah, exactly. Something that I found is the amount of people that of drivers that have taken me on Uber or Lyft, right? That when you're having conversations with them, you realize that they're basically in a transition, right? So they're a business owner. They're coming up with an idea, they're launching that idea, and they're using the gig economy as a bridge until that idea works, right? So that's something that I've seen that I found very, very interesting. And I've also seen people that, you know, take it up out of retirement because they need money for something, right? So I remember having an Uber driver that was driving and was telling me that he was retired, very happy, but that his daughter is getting married and he needed some money for, you know, for the wedding. So he would be driving for a couple of months, you know, to save up that money. So he's not picking, you know, to be able to pay for the wedding. Right. And I just thought that's fantastic because those gig jobs have allowed people to have that flexibility. Right? You're plugging in and plugging out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's not only those jobs, by the way, there are lots of other jobs that bubbled up like that, right? Whether it's creation. I mean, I talked to a couple of people that now they're using, you know, Canva and other tools like that. Not saying that they're highly sophisticated tools, but they're using some of these tools that are accessible to leverage their skills that they may have to get little jobs that could help them fulfill whatever they're trying to do so they could live, again, from my perspective, live the purpose or live the life that why they think they exist on earth for. And now these, to your point earlier, right, the whole digital transformation is happening, mm-hmm. now allowing people to find their purpose, their gig, or their bridge to get to where they need to go.
Yeah.
By utilizing some of these tools that are out there today.
Yeah. So I would love to spend some time talking about, I know that you work with, you've created a canvas, and I also know that you have a book, The Power of Seven. So I want you to talk to me about those. But before we move into talking about those, I wanted to ask you, I think a lot of the of the conversation has been centered around entrepreneurs, around this economy, around the U.S., right? I wanted to ask you, what about some of the more disadvantaged countries that that you work with? I don't know, maybe in Africa or in Asia. Sure. You know, what type of challenges do you see there for entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny if you ask the majority of entrepreneurs, they seem to be complaining about the same thing, right? Regulation, resources, funding. That seems to be like...
So it's the same across in every language.
Every language, every country I go to. That seems to be like the first three complaints. Regulations, infrastructure, and money. I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah, okay. Access to money.
Yeah, but the reality is in some places, actually, it is true that there are some bigger hurdles to register the company. There are bigger hurdles to, like I was saying, to transport the product or the services or to reach customers that are not reachable right now. Or the internet is pretty weak. You can't have this kind of, you know, call that we're having right now in a one way or another. Or it'll be interrupted a few times at least. So that's reality. And also funding. Some of the times the funding is not there. And what I've discovered is the same problems really everywhere. No matter how easy things are for you to register your business, someone's going to complain about regulations and how easy it is to get some money. Someone's going to complain how hard it is to get some money because it depends on their network and who they're dealing with. And are they asking for the right people for the right amount at the right time? Or are they asking the wrong people? So a lot of times startups will go to the bank. And also people, you can go to the bank only if you have excellent credit, something to be collateral, and you know someone that could potentially vouch for you. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the banks are the wrong place to ask for money for startups. So, you know, it just depends on the situation. Mm-hmm. And then that's not a rule, but just as a starting point.
Of course.
So that kind of thing that I've seen overseas, that a lot of times those three obstacles become a challenge. And then sometimes they're remote. So there's no access to like major, you know, transportation, major connections, that's also gone. So that makes it a little harder for them to start a business. You know, we have a couple of projects right now in several countries with women entrepreneurship. So the society might look at a woman to say, you're not equipped to do this, or sometimes it's just the environment is not supportive, you know, similar in the US, like women in construction sometimes might feel, or some other fields, they might feel the same way, right? So there are all kinds of challenges from culture as well as bylaws, as well as resources that could potentially be a challenge.
So, and probably this is a question that you cannot answer in one podcast, but how do you deal with those cultural challenges, right? Yeah. You know, let's say a woman entrepreneur in a culture that it's, you know, that is not supportive of that, or that it's not that usual. I mean, how can you help women in those situations, for example, to take that leap and launch a business?
Yeah, well, to your surprise, actually, you'll be surprised how many actually do launch it, and then they work.
No, I'm sure they do.
Yeah, yeah. I'm always surprised. I'm like, whoa, all these women, I didn't even realize that they're doing all this awesome stuff. Because, you know, to your point earlier, there's a lot of times they're not, you know, not necessarily being celebrated, right? They're not necessarily being celebrated. So I think one of the things that I usually try to do is help them asking them questions to help them think through what they could say or do within their environment to embrace it, right? So helping them connect with each other, creating their own, you know, network, supporting each other, finding ways to, you know, mentor each other or give a hand to each other. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things I noticed really quickly in some of the areas that are underserved, I call it, or underrepresented, is unfortunately some of the times they're actually their, you know, the community is their worst, you know, enemy in a way, because they're not giving hands to each other, because they might come from a place where they think, scarcity, right? So I got to survive. So if you have something, that means I don't have it. So that means I'm going to lose something, versus saying, you know what, I'm going to uplift you, because if I uplift you, you're going to try to find ways to uplift me. Or if we all uplift each other, the community gets uplifted, then we have much more for each other to offer in a bigger market. So I think that's just part of the conversation that you have to bring up without saying right or wrong, or do this or do that. Because at the end of the day, from my work, I mean, I always tell people, I'm going to be with you for the duration of the work. I'm going to be with you after the work, but I live in the US and I'm going to go back to my home. You have to understand what you need to do to live where you are and continue the work. So you have to really figure out what would be the best way to keep this conversations going beyond my time with you. And I asked them questions to help them think through that. And I asked them, you know, I also suggest like creating network that bridges those gaps between the communities, so that those kinds of things usually seems to have helped other groups in the past.
Of course, of course. Well, fascinating. So let's move to your canvas and to the power of seven. Tell our audience about that.
You're very kind, as usual.
No, come on. I mean, the way I see it is, you have tools that could help people.
Yeah.
And why shouldn't we plug them in and give them access to our audience?
Yeah, sure. Well, the Canvas people can download for free. And what I did during, I was lucky in the last couple of years, is as I started reflecting back on what I've been working with entrepreneurs for 30 years, right? Helping launch or start up businesses or grow businesses, and working with the institutions to support those kind of activities. So I'm very lucky to have, I call it the both high level and then the actual feet on the ground picture, and then with all the stakeholders to really understand what's happening. So someone might tell me I do A, B, C, but then I get to hear from someone else what they really do. I get to see myself for myself what they really do. And then I get to maybe talk to their customers to see what they really do. And what I did is the last couple of years, I started reflecting on the journey that I've taken personally, and then on the journeys that I've been able to touch through my career. And I realized no one really has taken the time, at least from my circles, right, to explain what would it take if someone to look at me and say, what do I need to do to stay resilient with all these speed bumps that I'm going to show up with? Mm-hmm. And when I started looking at what are some of the tools out there that I had access to that I was using to deploy, I recognized that they had different components of it, but they never really mushed. And some of it people might consider it fluff, or it's not important or relevant, but that's what kept people going. And the first thing is was the creation of this canvas. And I initially didn't think really much of it because I was just giving it out as part of the conversation, you know, initially with some circles and some ideas. And then I took the time to really think through, okay, what are those blocks of things that people really go through? Let me really dig deeper. He or she said this, but I know these facts about them. They did not say that I think is relevant to what they got them here, because in our conversation, it was the things that they discussed, but they never brought it up in public, right? So this was how I created the canvas. So the canvas is called Resilient Canvas. And I initially called it Resilient Entrepreneur Canvas. And occasionally I call it Resilient Leadership Canvas. What I really learned later is from people's feedback is a resilient canvas, how to stay resilient in the field that you're in, or in the field that you live in. Go ahead.
And where can people download it? You mentioned that people can download it.
Yeah, they could download my website, myismink.com, which is International Strategic Management website. So myinternationalstrategicmanagementinc.com, myismink.com. We could make sure that they have those kinds of places in your chat or something. We will add it as a type up.
Of course.
But basically,
of course,
they could download it. Right now, it's available in Arabic, English, and Russian. We've delivered this program already in 60-some countries, and we continue to deliver it. And it's really four blocks. I'll give you just the high level. It's the mindset, how you think. It's you and what's around you as an individual. And then it's the business idea and what you have and what you could leverage to make it move. And then the last block is how to move these ideas forward with some basic things. So those are, I call them, the four big blocks that I discovered from a resiliency perspective. And then if you start unfolding them, they could be potentially up to eight blocks, because there are some other blocks within each one of the blocks. Under self, there's you and then what's around you. So this could be two different blocks, or you could look at it as one big block.
Okay.
So it depends how you structure it, is somewhere between four to eight blocks of resiliency.
Awesome.
Yeah, and of course, we have a workshop on it. We have a whole training on it. Right now, we've deployed in several other countries, as well as in the U.S., and it's somewhere between 7 to 14 weeks, depending on what they're trying to accomplish with what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, taking those blocks and unfolding them for each person and then moving them through the process.
Of course. So I see that the your website is now in the ticker underneath. So if people are interested in having more information about what you guys do and the workshops and everything that you're talking about, they can also get in touch with you through the website, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. For sure. Now,
that's a beautiful thing to have people like you, right? So you just make magic happen.
So, so let me ask you then about the book, The Power of Seven.
Yeah. So The Power of Seven was something similar, actually. I've been working on this. Probably this was an idea that I've had for almost, you know, 15, 20 years, early 90s when I started thinking about it. And what I did is Sam reflected on what does it really take to make a sale? Having sold nothing in days and having sold some in some days, what did you really make? And I started reflecting on my early days of selling in the streets and selling to neighborhoods, all mm-hmm. the way to, you know, current situation in the town, managing a retail store. And what they all tell you, without them saying it, that all studies shows that mentally, if you show someone something from 8 to 10 times, somewhere that range, 7 to 10 times, 8 to 10 times, mm-hmm. somewhere that range, you're most likely going to get them to buy. Yeah. Now, they might buy into the story. They might buy into referring you to someone. They might be whatever it is. So it's all about the touches. And I felt, why isn't anyone explaining this to the average person that's trying to launch a business? So yeah. I wanted to write in a way, and I always people, I didn't write this for people who are marketing individuals. I didn't write this for people who are writers. I didn't write this for people who are highly, you know, educated in the system about how to do this business. I wrote this for individuals who are launching a business, maybe starting to grow a business with disadvantage of language as a barrier, no resources, limited to what they have learned about marketing or sales. And that's really what I built it around. And I made it really simple to say after every chapter, let's look at what we've discussed. Let's come up with action steps that you can implement. Mm-hmm. So I drew from my FinGen show, which is a talk show slash kind of like a podcast like this, and said, let's take a FinGen moment and write down what you're going to do. And then the next page talked about action steps to make it move forward. Mm-hmm. And it's really about coming up with 7 ways to touch a customer over a period of 7 weeks, 7 months, 7 years. And mm-hmm. what are the ways that you're going to touch them? I don't mean physical touch. I mean,
no, I know. I know exactly what you mean. I mean, we do that a lot with our clients. We talk about the importance of building a customer base and then nurturing that base, because what we know is that anybody that we're presenting our services or our products today, only a small percentage will be ready to make a decision today. Right. But in the next 2 years, there might be needing this product or service. And if you're not top of mind, if you're not staying in touch, then they will make a choice to go with someone else, right? No. So we call it nurturing. You have to nurture your prospects, and you nurture them with information, with education, and you know, you're getting back to them in a way that is non-intrusive, right? So a lot of that is done through email marketing. It could be done through different things, right? But it's very, very important when we talk to clients, when we're building, let's say, funnels and pipelines, right? It's important to consider that all of the leads and prospects we're pulling into a funnel, that just a small percentage are going to be converting, but the rest is not that it's lost. We now need to work on that list for the next couple of years, so we actually start getting some return on investment of that initial effort, right? But if you contact one person one time, you know, you're basically throwing your money away.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, I also people, you know, part of it obviously is relationships. So, I mean, one of the things I didn't like, especially when I bought certain items, is the high pressure, high sales attitude. I'm like, I'm not saying it doesn't work, because clearly it works. It's just, I don't want to be participating in it. I want to participate in the sales that makes more meaningful, and that mm-hmm. means more touches. That also means that maybe I send you an article one day versus sending you just a sale. I read something that reminds me of you. I might send it to you. I see your birthday. I send you. So helping them think through just beyond the sale, how can you really establish these relationships that potentially people could, to your point, thinking of you when it's time to buy something, say, you know what, I got to call him or her or it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, thank you so much for your time today. I know you're a very busy man, and we've spent our hour together today, and it's 15 minutes recording, but we spent 10 minutes catching up. So thank you so much for your time, Fariz. I hope you continue doing this great job, helping people make that transition into building their own, little piece of equity, right? Mm-hmm. And thank you for that. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for making the time and spending the time with me as well, because I know you're just as busy.
Very good. Very good. And thanks, everyone. See you in the next episode. Bye-bye.